Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Stephanie.
I'm Tom.
It's our psychology unit, guys. We're going to talk about the brain, our minds, and how sometimes they work a little differently than other people's. But we all struggle with things, whether it's physical or mental. And it's good to learn about these things so we'll be more sympathetic or empathetic to the people around us. It's good to know about this stuff so that you can show more care and concern for people around you that have to deal with tough things. This is OCD. It's obsessive compulsive disorder. People who have this disorder often are faced with these obsessions that they can't control. Either they're too neat and they have to have everything clean, or they have to wash their hands a certain amount of times. Sometimes they actually have awful thoughts in their minds that they can't control, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. So today we're going to continue talking about OCD. What are we going to learn today?
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the other symptoms, and hopefully we can talk about some things that you can do about this. And also we want to send a message to other people to, be a patient with people who have this problem. They're not doing this for attention.
No.
It is a real problem, and it's best that you try to understand and help them out. And, you know, we're all in this together sort of thing. So let's get to it, everybody. Let's listen to the contents of today's lesson, and then we'll come back to discuss it. While the excessive nature of OCD can make it seem hard to overcome, someone with this disorder can learn to manage it. The first step toward a breakthrough is to acknowledge any known triggers and list the ideas and situations that prompt abnormal responses. By tracking their triggers, sufferers can better anticipate their urges and ultimately suppress them. For instance, a person may have the stressful compulsion to repeatedly check that the front door is locked. In this case, they may find that paying close attention when they first put the key in the lock will spare them their usual impulses later. Some experts suggest using a graded fear ladder, with the sufferers starting by confronting lesser fears and then working up to those that are more acute. For example, they might tackle a fear of contamination by phasing out repetition as a coping mechanism, first in a controlled environment, such as their own kitchen, and later in more threatening environments, such as public restrooms. In these distressing situations, it's critical to challenge obsessive thoughts. Sufferers should ask themselves, "Am I equating an irrational idea with a fact? How does obsessing over it help me or hurt me? And can I view the situation in a more positive way?" Contemplating these answers helps sufferers recognize that their habits are irrational and damaging. Finally, a sufferer should remember to reach out for support. Talking to a sympathetic friend can make worries feel less menacing and remind someone that they have a support system. With these changes of mentality, people with OCD can journey toward a happier and healthier future.
Okay, guys, let's dig into our article here. While the excessive nature of OCD can make it seem hard to overcome or, you know, to tackle, to be successful with, someone with this disorder can learn to manage it. That has to be true because we've got some people who have been very successful in their fields, although they struggle with OCD. So we know that you can learn to manage it, to get better with it. The first step toward a breakthrough is something that you learn that changes everything, or maybe you have a breakthrough in your career. Something happens that really sets you up for success. So the first step toward a breakthrough is to acknowledge, you have to acknowledge any known triggers and list the ideas and situations that prompt abnormal responses, these things that you're doing. So if you acknowledge something, you say, "Yeah, that's true. I'll admit it's true." Or you accept something. Maybe you acknowledge the existence of this disorder itself. Some people want to say, no, I don't have OCD. You're crazy. But if the people around you are worried about you, you need to listen to them. Once you acknowledge it, you can then go forward and tackle it, conquer it. Now, some of these things that happen or that people do start with triggers. A trigger is something that sets off another action. It makes you do something. For example, I'll use a different problem people suffer with is allergies. Something you just sneeze and sneeze and sneeze and it's horrible. A trigger for you might be dust in your apartment, or it might be you're outside and you're near grass or flowers. That can be a trigger for you. It sets off your horrible symptoms like sneezing and runny nose and eyes watering.
Yeah, maybe you remember the movie Back to the Future.
Yeah.
The main character there, Marty McFly, he was triggered when somebody called him a chicken. He did not like that. And when somebody called him a chicken, which means a coward,
Yeah. He
would get really mad. He would accept any challenges and do stupid things. So that's what a trigger is, something that starts something, usually something that shouldn't start in the first place. So, yeah, you can recognize and acknowledge those triggers and then list the ideas and situations that prompt abnormal responses. So, yeah, you're basically recognizing what happens to you and why it happens to you and stuff like that. You basically acknowledge or admit they exist. And, of course, these are ideas and situations that will prompt or bring about or encourage or trigger abnormal responses. So that's what prompt means. It means to encourage or bring something about, etc. And abnormal here just means something that is not normal. You may know somebody who has abnormal behavior, and they should go see someone about that.
I was just thinking how we use prompt. Prompt and trigger are similar. We use the word teleprompter for people giving speeches. Have you seen them on TV, or maybe you've seen them in real life? Their speech is actually on a monitor that is scrolling and they're reading those words. That's a teleprompter. It's prompting them with the words they need to say. So, yeah. It's good to know what situations set you off. You could say it that way too. Write them down and make a plan so you can actually battle that or confront it. Abnormal, like Tom said, just means not normal. Maybe you have a cut on your finger, and typically it's supposed to heal in a week. But there's something abnormal about the cut because it just keeps getting worse and worse. So, yeah, those things are important. You have to track your triggers, know what sets you off.
And here in the next sentence it says, by tracking their triggers, by following them and seeing where they go, sufferers can better anticipate their urges and ultimately suppress them. So if they can recognize what makes them obsessive about something, then they can later anticipate the urges that will happen later on, and then they can suppress them eventually. So here to anticipate means to expect something in the future, okay? Anticipate, that's the verb. You can expect this to happen in the future. I anticipate great joy when the holiday comes, for example. And anticipation is the noun form.
Mm-hmm. And if you suppress something, it's like you're holding it back. You're not letting it really come through, suppress. Sometimes free speech is suppressed. A government won't let somebody express their feelings, and so they forcibly make them stop speaking or they put an end to it. That's suppress. Suppression is the noun form. So it's sort of just like preventing something from happening. It could be an action, it could be an expression, it could be something else, but you're restraining something, you're suppressing. Maybe you like a guy, but you find out, you know, he's not such a good guy after all. You need to suppress those feelings and get rid of them. But anyway, for instance, it says here, a person may have the stressful compulsion to repeatedly check that the front door is locked. Oh, this is my father. It's like they didn't interview me before. But yeah, he would check the doors all the time. In this case, they may find that paying close attention when they first put the key in the lock will spare them their usual impulses later. We would laugh at Dad, but Dad would always say, Well, you kids never lock the door. I'm just checking up on you. That was his excuse.
Right, so their suggestion here is that you should pay close attention when you first put the key in the lock, and that will spare you your usual impulses later.
I think this is somebody that lives alone, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure how your locks work in your house there.
But, he's inside the house, and he's checking the doors from inside the house.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in some cases, though, you may need to lock the door with a key from the inside. So just remind yourself that, yes, I do remember sticking the key in the lock, and I do remember turning it. So hopefully you can spare yourself from those impulses later. In other words, you can stop yourself from getting obsessed about checking the door again in 5 minutes or something, because you'll remember that you already did it. And hopefully this will help you cut back some of that obsessive compulsive behavior.
Let's move on to the next paragraph, guys. It says, some experts suggest using a graded fear ladder, with a sufferer starting by confronting lesser fears, the things that aren't so bad, at the bottom. But as you work up the ladder, those fears become more serious or more acute. They're definitely harder for that person to actually work on. So this is a great idea. Figure out what you can solve by yourself, and you might have to go to a doctor to have help on the things that are really acute. Acute is a word we use when something's quite bad, it's present, and you're experiencing something at a really severe degree. He has acute bronchitis. Or for me, I could say I have acute asthma. It's bad. So if it's not so bad, don't use that word acute. But acute is something that you experience at a really intense degree.
Right. So there are some lesser fears, some obsessions that aren't so bad. And then there are some that are even worse, like you're afraid everybody's going to come and kill you.
Yeah.
Or that your dog is going to grow fangs and attack you right in the neck.
Oh, and, like a werewolf.
Yeah, we'll turn into a monster or something like that.
Yeah.
So yes, you need to start with the lesser fears and then work your way up the ladder to the more acute conditions. And we'll continue talking about this in just a couple of seconds. But hey, let's take a break right now and listen to our Chinese teacher.
Hi, everyone. My name's Jenny. 我们今天要继续来看第七单元。这篇文章呢，谈的是 OCD。那我们这后半部就来谈谈，有没有什么办法可以让有强迫症的人学着控制它。当然，这边就提到，如果要说你有这样子的 disorder， 也就是这样子的疾病，你要控制的话，他提到有几个步骤。在这一段就谈到，第一步，你必须要先承认你可能引发你强迫症的某一些原因，先了解，的确，这样子我就会有像强迫症的行为出现。这个地方注意到 known triggers， 说你要承认已知的能引发你 OCD 的原因。known 当然这是一个过去分词，我们了解过去分词，其实它本身常常就转化成为像一个形容词的用法。当然这还是跟被动有关的，所以说到这个 triggers 当名词哦，引发的原因是被知道，是已知的。再来，下面就提到我们可以怎么做。这一步就是说，你可以追踪这些诱因，然后你就可以预测得到，如果这样的话，你可能接下来就行为上会出现强迫症，然后因为你了解，你可以预测得到，你可以控制它。好，我们要提一个介系词，就是 by。 我们知道 by 它有很多种用法，那以这个地方 by tracking their triggers， 这个 by 你知道它后面加的常常是一个动作，当你要表示借由这样的行为，借由做什么动作，那你就会用选择 by。 再来，我们继续往下看，下面就提到还有没有其他的方式呢？在接下来谈的第二种方法，有些专家就建议 using a graded fear ladder。 好，注意到这一段的这一句当然也是代表主题句啊，就是我们讲到方法一、方法二，那这个方法二用到一个字 suggest， 我们晓得 suggest 代表建议，那 这个字到底怎么用？它一样的，它有不同的句型跟用法。那其中之一就像在这里 suggest 本身后面它是可以直接加受词的，也就是 suggest something。 可是如果你现在建议的是做什么动作，那就记得咯，直接接的动词必须改成 V-I-N-G。 所以也就是为什么你看到 using the graded fear letter， 除了这个 V-I-N-G 要注意之外，好，我们再来谈这个 graded。 我们知道前面这一段里面我们就说过了，过去分词可以转为形容词，那像这边谈的是一种分级的恐惧阶梯， graded用了过去分词，当然就表示说这个所谓的恐惧阶梯啊是被分等级的，也一样有一个被动的含义，所以是 graded。 接下来呢还有一个句型，就是接着 fear letter 后面有一个 with the sufferers starting by blah blah blah。 我们注意到 with 专家建议你用分级的恐惧阶梯，那后面家就提到说怎么做，它的情形是怎样。英文的介系词里面的 with 它就有这种功能，你要表达这个附带的状况情形，你用 with 加受词，然后后面加补语，所以这里就是很明显的套用了这个句型。这也就是为什么 with 后面的受词 the sufferers， 然后接着是补语的 starting ing。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's continue with our lesson. We're talking about OCD in today's lesson, obsessive compulsive behavior. Now, you probably can't cure this thing all the way, but you can try to manage your condition to suffer less and to not scare other people so much.
Yeah.
And we last left off with the concept of the fear ladder. You just confront your lesser fears first and then work your way up each rung of the ladder until you get to the more serious or acute problems. Now, here's an example. They might tackle a fear of contamination by phasing out repetition as a coping mechanism, first in a controlled environment, such as their own kitchen, and later in more threatening environments, such as public restrooms. This is kind of a long sentence here, so let's explain it bit by bit here. You might tackle a fear, for example, a fear of contamination, which means things get dirty pretty fast. You're afraid of that, and oftentimes you repeat yourself, you wash your hands over and over again, but you want to phase out that repetition as a coping mechanism. A coping mechanism here just refers to a way that you deal with a situation. You want to phase out this repetition. To phase something out just means gradually to stop doing that thing over time. Like when people quit smoking, for example, they phase out the number of cigarettes they have per day. Maybe one day they smoke a whole pack, and then the next day they smoke 18 cigarettes, and then the next day 16, etc. They phase it out gradually.
Or maybe you own a piece of equipment. Could be, I don't know, let's pretend you have a really old smartphone. And I guess a company usually lets you know when they're going to stop supporting that particular version that you have. I know that happened to me a couple years ago. It's like, no, but they said, we're no longer going to provide support for this. I think it was Microsoft. We're no longer going to provide support for this. We've been phasing this out, but starting this year, it will be gone entirely. But yeah, it happens slowly over a period of time, little by little. So that's a good idea. Yeah, some people really do well with these coping mechanisms. First, in a controlled environment, something that is you're comfortable in, usually it's your home, right, such as a kitchen, and later in more threatening environments, maybe it's at school. That's tougher because you've got people around you that aren't necessarily there to love you like your family is.
Exactly. So first it's a controlled situation, your own kitchen, and then you branch out into a public restroom, a restroom in school.
A little harder, harder as the stages go on, yeah.
Again, working your way up that ladder.
Good idea.
Okay, so here in the next paragraph it says, in these distressing situations, it's critical to challenge obsessive thoughts. So these are distressing situations. You get very worried in these situations. Gee, are things clean enough? Have I washed my hands enough? Is the door locked for sure? I need to make sure of that. So these are distressing situations. Again, it's not funny for the people who suffer from this. They really are going through a lot of anxiety. But you need to challenge those obsessive thoughts. You need to step back and say, yes, washing my hands 20 times in less than 10 minutes is unusual. So let me challenge those obsessive thoughts. Maybe I can reduce that number to 10 and maybe eventually 5, maybe down to 1. But no less than 1, we do still need to wash our hands. That still is a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Don't get rid of these good actions just because you've been obsessing for so long. Now, sufferers should ask themselves, these are really good questions, guys. Am I equating an irrational idea, a crazy idea, with a fact, something that's true? If you equate things, you think they're equal in your mind. So that's a really good question to ask yourself. Yeah, this irrational idea that keeps going through my mind, is it factual? Am I just making this up out of the blue? Probably. Here's another question. How does obsessing over it help me or hurt me? Yeah, it never does help, does it? And can I view the situation in a more positive way? So there's a lot of self-talk, I think, that they're talking about here. Kind of encouraging yourself not to be crazy. Now, if you equate something with something else, you consider them to be the same or very equivalent to each other. They're, you know, they're not exactly the same, but they're very similar. You could say, most people equate McDonald's with Burger King. But I think they're a bit different. I think McDonald's has better French fries. Although Burger King has some good onion rings that I like. But that's a way just to compare two things. If they equate in your mind, it just means they're very similar.
Yes, McDonald's and Burger King are unique and outstanding in their own way. But equate, yes, you try to establish the relationship between those things. Like, for example, lots of people equate hard work with success. That isn't always necessarily true. Sometimes success comes from being really smart and not necessarily working 12 or 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
But lots of people do equate hard work with financial success. And yes, how does obsessing over it help me or hurt me? Again, you're kind of stepping back, looking at yourself, observing yourself doing these things and wondering, yeah, is this really rational? Is it really true? Do I really need to wash my hands 5 times?
Yeah.
Maybe once is enough. Maybe that is the fact. And yes, can I view the situation in a more positive way? Contemplating these answers helps sufferers recognize that their habits are irrational and damaging. So again, they need to take a look at themselves and realize, yes, I'm doing something unusual here, and maybe I can reduce the frequency of these behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. That'd be really good. So finally, a sufferer should remember to reach out for support. I think some people get embarrassed and they don't want to talk about it, but really there are a lot of sympathetic people around you, especially the people who love you, that understand, at least they can see what you're going through and they want to help. So talking to a sympathetic friend can make worries feel less menacing. Oh, that's a great word. If something's menacing, it's something that's very threatening to you, something very scary. A dog who shows his teeth and growls at you can be very menacing. I tend to leave those dogs alone. So, yeah, this sympathetic friend can make you feel like, hey, you can handle this. We're here to support you. And they can remind you that you have a support system. A support system just means your friends and family who are around there to love you and help you in life.
Yeah, and they are there to support you, not make fun of you.
Although sometimes your brothers and sisters will, let's be honest.
Sometimes, but hopefully you do remember that they're just doing that for fun and they're not really trying to hurt you on purpose.
No.
Which may or may not be the case in school.
Right.
If you've got bullies there who've got issues of their own and somehow feel the need to pick on other people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have this problem, you're going to be an easy target. Good.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully there will be some kind of support network that says, hey, that's just a bully. That's what they do. But again, these feelings can be menacing. They can make you feel really scared. And with these changes of mentality, people with OCD can journey toward a happier and healthier future. So yes, we got the word mentality here. Mentality just refers to the way you think, okay? And it generally refers to your thinking patterns, your attitudes and stuff like that. People might have certain mentalities about hippies, for example. Oh, they just sit around smoking dope all the time and listen to psychedelia and stuff like that. That might be your attitude or your mentality toward those people.
We'll often hear this phrase, she has a victim mentality. You always think people are trying to hurt you. Everybody hates you. And that's very popular in today's society. Oh, don't have a victim mentality. Be strong. You can be as successful as you want to be if you work hard. Right now, we're going to listen one more time to our Chinese teacher, and then we'll be back to wrap up.
好，我们继续来谈专家所建议的利用分级的恐惧阶梯。那下面当然还有更加仔细的说明，告诉你你可以逐步的淘汰你重复的行为，然后呢，作为一种应对的机制来对付你对污染的恐惧。好，换句话说，先从比如说你可以选一个点，像这边就告诉你先从受控的环境开始，往下有第三个做法，你可以试试看质疑强迫性的想法，这个也很关键很重要哦。也就是你必须要让自己的大脑去问自己，我是不是有去同等看待这种非理性的想法跟事实吗？好，当你做这些自我质疑的时候，你可能就会开始意识到你现在做的行为本身可能真的不合理而且有害。那我们这边要提醒大家一个句型，像这边说到Contemplating these answers helps sufferers recognize blah blah blah. 这个用法其实我们常见英文的句构，你把动名词片语当主词，整个的主词就是思量一下这些答案。这个当主词，动词是单数哦 ,helps. 最后他还告诉大家还有一个方式，就是记得找别人帮忙，寻求协助。好，那这一边段落里头一样，他告诉你该怎么办，其中提到 talking to a sympathetic friend can make worries feel less menacing. 这个也是一样，用动名词片语当主词，所以重复的句型应该要特别留意。今天讲解就到这边，我们下次见。
That's it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, if you're suffering from OCD, there is a way to deal with this problem. You can get help, and hopefully we've given you all some suggestions here. So from all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.